Welcome into the 11th episode of the Five Reasons Podcast. I'm Ethan Skolnick, longtime sports writer and commentator in South Florida, along with my friend here, Chris Whittingham. We try to take you around the world of sports, focus a lot on the NBA. We're going to do another NBA podcast today, and we waited on this one, Chris. We were going to do this before the trade deadline and talk about where LeBron James might play next season. It's always a hot topic, and particularly around this time of year, and particularly when he is not signed for the next season and has kind of held the organization hostage a little bit.
And particularly when his organization is a cluster bleep.
Right, that too. And we did a podcast on that a couple of weeks ago about whether the Cavaliers could still get to the finals. We decided to wait on this one until after the trade deadline. I think that was a fortuitous decision that we did because obviously the Cavs situation has changed quite a bit because they played the greatest game in NBA history yesterday. That's what I'm getting from reading social media today. It changes everything because LeBron started to smile quite a bit because he was out from under Isaiah Thomas and Iman Shumpert and Derrick Rose and Jay Crowder and I guess Dwayne Wade too, right?
Yesterday cemented that they're going back to the finals.
They're going back to the finals. It was just amazing. So we decided that after the greatest game that's ever been played, and I only say that somewhat facetiously because I think the fact that Paul Pierce had to sit through that was kind of funny, particularly the way that Paul Pierce acted.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, I did too.
He was so upset that Isaiah Thomas was going to get a 30-second video on his night. I've never been a huge Paul Pierce fan, Chris, I got to admit. And Celtics fans, who can be a little bit obnoxious, and they had to wait through that entire 30-point blowout to get to the Paul Pierce celebration. So a little bit of joy in that. But let's get to this today, Chris, because this thing came out last week before the trade deadline, came out through Bovada. The odds on where LeBron James would play Game 1 of the 2018-2019 season. And I sent you these odds at the time because a lot of them made no sense to me. And let's go through them quickly, and then we'll get to five of the spots that he could play next year. They had the Houston Rockets as 5-2 favorites. I don't think that's a huge surprise because his buddy Chris Paul is there, and the Rockets have a legitimate chance to win a championship this year. Obviously, they're well-positioned to do that, and they have the guy who's probably going to be the MVP of the league in James Harden. They had the Cavaliers second at 11-4. Again, that was before the trades were made when they all still hated each other. They had the Lakers at 5-1 third, and that was before the Lakers made the trade with the Cavaliers, which cleared cap space.
Good so far.
Potentially acquire LeBron James. Yeah, no problem with the first three. We're going to talk about all three of those individually on the podcast. They had the Warriors 6-1 as the fourth team. You know, again, that report came out. Chris Haynes, we talked about that on a recent pod, probably dropped out by Rich Paul, thrown out there that LeBron would consider a meeting with the Golden State Warriors. I think it'd be terrible for his legacy, but they have the Warriors fourth at 6-1. And then this is where some of the surprises came in here. They had the Detroit Pistons at 10-1. Can you explain that one to me?
I can't even venture again. We talked about it sort of after you said that to me, like, Detroit, what is even the link there? Because there's no, you know, Cleveland coming home. There's no front office. There's no player. I don't understand how Detroit gets in there in any conceivable form or fashion.
So we're going to throw that one out here. I don't think that's going to be one. It was we get to our five reasons for various places. I think we're just going to toss Detroit aside. Another one, they had a 10-1 here, the Philadelphia 76ers. That one makes a little more sense. We'll touch on that later. They have Minnesota at 12-1. The Timberwolves are poised, you know, to sort of move up the Western Conference. They've made big improvements this year with Jimmy Butler. They have a nice young core with Towns and Wiggins, but I don't know. Again, cold weather, not a particularly attractive destination, and playing for Tibbs.
Not right. How many minutes? I think LeBron would average 49 minutes a game if he played for Tibbs.
I think that's low. I think it'd be a lot more than that, actually.
I think if you go back, and I think if it's through Wilt Chamberlain's basketball reference page, there's one year where he averaged more than 48 minutes a game. Because the team played a number of overtime games, he averaged more than 48 minutes a game. That would be LeBron under Tibbs.
Yeah, I think Tibbs would force overtime intentionally just to make Jimmy Butler and LeBron come out there and play more minutes. So I think we're going to throw Minnesota out also. I don't understand that one. They have San Antonio at 14-1. We'll cover them a little bit. LeBron loves Popovich, and so a start there. He loves what that organization stands for. But we'll talk about the Spurs a little later. Then they have the Bucks at 15-1. I don't I don't see it. And then this gets to this one. They have 10th in the list, New York, which he does have somewhat of an affinity for the city and particularly for that building. But he's had – they have the Knicks at 16-1. He's had numerous opportunities to push the New York agenda and has not, right? I mean, he hasn't even wanted to take meetings with them. Yeah, I mean, I guess they're a little bit better off now without Phil talking about LeBron's posse. So that helps. But
they're still a cluster bleep organization.
They are. And Porzingis, being out for the next year, if he had somebody he wants to play with, he wouldn't be playing with him right away anyway. So that's the 10 teams that they have here on the list. Well, we're going to go with five others here, Chris. We're going to go with Cleveland, the Lakers, Houston, the Heat, which is not on this list, but I do think that they're worth touching on at least. And then we're going to go to the field. So let's start with the first one here. What I think is still the most likely scenario. I'm going to go with the first one with Cleveland. And it's not just based off yesterday's game, because I don't want to make too much of that. But I do think that as much as LeBron dislikes Dan Gilbert, and that's been apparent even as he's gone back to Cleveland and won a championship with him, still the easiest thing to do for LeBron at this point is just to stay put. I do think that although I don't want to make too much of one game in terms of the players they brought in, it was clear he wasn't happy with the players that were brought in before this group. The Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder trade didn't work out for LeBron. And that was apparent with LeBron's body language with both guys on the court throughout this season. So I'm not making it as much about the new guys they brought in. We're going to have to see how that fits. I do think there's something to be said for LeBron playing with non-stars. I talked about that on the podcast the other day. A lot of his best lineup combinations over the course of his career have come when he's been the only, legitimate star on the floor. And we can argue about what Kevin Love is and when he comes back. But right now, at least for the next couple months, he's going to be playing without a legitimate star next to him. But even if you go back to his Miami days, Chris, when you look at some of the best lineups, I go back to the 2012-2013 season, the 27-game winning streak. The best lineup during that 27-game winning streak was LeBron with four subs. It was LeBron playing with Ray Allen, who was not a star at that stage of his career, Norris Cole, Shane Battier, and Chris Anderson. Mm. So he's had tremendous success over the years playing with guys who just understand their roles. And we even saw it the other night before they brought in the new players. And I know they're playing an Atlanta team that's playing for the lottery right now or playing for the number one pick. But he had 19 assists in that game. And so we've seen sometimes you subtract the star. And I remember talking about this, Chris, during the NBA Finals, the first year that LeBron was back in Cleveland. And Dwayne Wade was up in Cleveland doing some commentary. And I remember talking to Dwayne about this after the game that I think Cavs went up 2-1 in that series. And that was a series, remember, that Kyrie Irving got hurt in the first game, didn't play again, and that Kevin Love was not available. And Dwayne said, LeBron plays better without another star next to him. And obviously Dwayne was, prior to him going to Cleveland, really the only superstar that LeBron had played with. And Dwayne was saying, LeBron plays better when he's in control of everything and he's playing with guys who sort of understand their roles, playing with shooters, get to their spots. He knows how to make the right passes, and it's clear in terms of what the role delineation is. And so I do think that he's going to enjoy playing with this group going forward. Again, without making too much of what happened yesterday, it's one of the things I said at the time of the trade. I do think a reinvigorated LeBron, because he's more in his element playing with these type of players, maybe that's the thing that sort of pushes him over the edge where he thinks, okay, it's not really worth the trouble of starting somewhere fresh. I'm just going to roll it out here for at least another year.
Yeah, and I think the point that you bring up about him playing better without stars makes a ton of sense, because when we're talking about stars in the NBA, we're talking about players that can create their own shot, that are about creating offense, right? And so when you're pairing LeBron with someone else who does that, you're kind of taking away something that LeBron does best. You're taking away the skill that he is most known for. And I think when you look at what his comp is in terms of historically, it's Magic Johnson rather than Michael Jordan. And for a lot of people, that's led people to denigrate his career. But I think that's his biggest skill. And so, yes, there are times where it does work that way. Where I would kind of push against it is, generally, NBA history would lead you to indicate that you need to have multiple stars on a team. And so I don't know if just rolling out this method and saying, well, LeBron plays best this way, well, there's a reason why they needed those Kyrie Irving 40-point games to go and win the championship. And so that is something of a balance to strike. To me, the reason why Cleveland makes the most sense is because Cleveland wouldn't need to totally break apart their team to keep him. And I think that is the most difficult part of trying to figure out where LeBron is going to go is even with Golden State, right? If Golden State wanted to bring him in, they got to basically have five players and nothing else, right? So if you're trying to bring in LeBron James and you're Houston, you're going to have to get rid of Ryan Anderson, you're going to have to get rid of Eric Gordon, you're going to have to get rid of a ton of money and a ton of players in order to make that work because, you know, that's a it's an expensive salary to go and bring in because I think we can pretty comfortably say LeBron's not taking less than the max. So where can he go where he would take the max and someone else would have to create that amount of cap space? And so to me, Cleveland makes the most sense because he can just keep going again and again and they can try and figure out a way to add players. But you don't have to break apart the team in order to bring LeBron in.
And one of the things I want to make clear here is I'm not saying that there's a better than 50% chance of LeBron staying in Cleveland. I'm simply saying of the teams that he could potentially be with next season, I would put Cleveland first. Doesn't mean that I'm saying that, you know, 51% chance of him being in Cleveland, but we're going to split these odds here between all of these different teams. And I still think when you look at those other teams individually and you look at Cleveland, I would still put Cleveland first.
And don't underestimate the conference in this situation too, because Cleveland can very comfortably be the best team in the conference when they're dialed in and when LeBron is going strong. And when you look at the other kind of best teams in the conference, is he going to Boston? Probably not. They're pretty well capped out. They can get rid of Hayward, but I mean, the situation between him and Kyrie, LeBron, frankly, as a rival, I saw Brian Windhorst was waxing poetic about how many big moments have come in TD Garden over the course of his career, a longstanding rivalry with that team. Toronto, again, would have to break apart their team. So in terms of if you're looking at the best candidates in the Eastern Conference to go and try and win the championship again, you'd still have to say Cleveland is best positioned to take care of that for him.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And again, he's not going to Toronto. I don't think, you know, when you look at the Eastern Conference, you say Cleveland, you know, with LeBron, if he has the right pieces around him, if he's more comfortable with the front office, he can continue to ignore Dan Gilbert and just move on with them the way that he's been. So I would still say they're best positioned, you know, whether or not this group works together. They've got a lot of money committed now going forward to these guys. You know, George Hill is a really, you know, I've always thought he was a really nice player. I've always thought he'd be a really good fit next to someone like LeBron because he can play off the ball and he can defend. A lot of money committed to George Hill over the next couple of seasons, right? I mean, he's making his contract actually descends, but he's making $20 million this year, then it's $19 next year, and then he's going to be an $18 million player at age 33.
But that last year is non-guaranteed, though, so they can just cut him.
Okay, so they'll cut him loose on that one. Tristan Thompson guaranteed in that last year, 2019-20?
I would believe so. I'll check,
right,
though.
All right, so that's so you're looking at close to $19 million for Tristan Thompson in that year. So and then Jordan Clarkson, they've got money committed to him now going forward. So look, Gilbert's going to be paying a ton of tax if he keeps LeBron. If they re-sign Rodney Hood, who's a restricted free agent after this season, that's just the cost of doing business. But look, if he pays it, if he stays out of LeBron's way, even if he decides to sell the team, which is something that's been sort of thrown out there as in a report, although Gilbert came out and denied it, then could you see LeBron finishing his career in Cleveland? I think it's more likely as an individual scenario than any of these other ones still, even though I think a lot of these other places could potentially be attractive. Let's get to the second one here, and they're more in play because of the trade that was just made where they cleared out Clarkson's salary, which is the Lakers. And I guess the question here becomes, Chris, is what do we think of the Lakers' young core, and are they far enough along, have they shown enough potential so far that LeBron would look at them and say, okay, if I don't need to play with a star, if, say, Paul George doesn't come to the Lakers, or I don't get, or say DeMarcus Cousins, maybe coming back from the injury, doesn't go to Lakers. If I don't get a second star, would playing with guys like Ingram and Kuzma and Ball, some of the other pieces that they have there, they probably need to move out Julius Randle out of the way. But with those three pieces in particular, would that be attractive enough to LeBron to go to a place where he already has a house, where clearly he's got some Hollywood interests with his Spring Hill Entertainment and some of the things that they've done out there? Do you see the Lakers as a potential fit for him?
I do, because in some respects, oddly enough, it reminds me of the letter that he wrote in 2014 when he went from Miami to Cleveland, and the whole idea was going to be, I'm going to build with a young core. Now, obviously, flipped Andrew Wiggins for, you know, Kevin Love, and, you know, they were ready-made to compete for a championship straight away. So I do think that can kind of be BS in some respects, but I also think that the Lakers next season and what they have committed against the salary cap, really the only thing that's prohibitive is Luol Deng, and they got to figure out to get off of his $36 million. They can use a stretch provision and pay basically $7 million a season. But other than that, in terms of the cap commitments that they have right now, it's about $40 million heading into next season. And if they get off Deng, if they can get off $11 million, so you'd be down to about, you know, $27 million. They can do a lot of damage in the free agency market. And I think they have enough of a young core. And even if, let's say LeBron gets there and says, I don't want to play with Lonzo Ball, I don't want to deal with the LeVar stuff, they can do a lot of damage in the trade market in terms of getting Lonzo Ball for a good asset or a good player to fill out that roster. So if you're making me guess right now, I would say the Lakers are the top candidate to go and get LeBron James because they have so much cap space and they pulled off a pretty amazing trade with Cleveland. And I know I heard both Bobby Marks and Adrian Wojnarowski were making this point on their podcast where they were saying, well, the Lakers, if they really wanted to get off of Clarkson in the summer because they got a commitment from LeBron, they could have done that. But in some respects, Cleveland made it easy on the Lakers. They gave them a first-round pick for Clarkson to go and get Larry Nance. And I don't understand that because the first-round pick can then be used to go and get another player that can help LeBron and the Lakers. So, yes, they did hasten LeBron's departure from Cleveland because they gave them the out on Jordan Clarkson. There was two contracts they had to move in order to make this work. Jordan Clarkson, actually it was three, Jordan Clarkson, Timofey Mozgov, and Luol Deng. Now, the Lakers are two-thirds of the way there, and they didn't give up a ton to do it. Now, you can sort of prognosticate maybe D'Angelo Russell will be a good player and the Lakers missed out on that, but you ended up filling that spot with Lonzo Ball. And so they are basically most of the way there in creating the space for LeBron to basically handpick a team. And if I said to you right now, the Lakers, without making any trades, can have a team with LeBron James and Paul George on it, and then you add it to, you know, Ball and Josh Hart, who's a decent-looking player, and Ingram and Kuzma, and then you kind of build from there, I would say that's a bang-on team. And so in terms of if we're talking about a slew of other candidates that would have to break themselves apart in order to add LeBron, you have a team in the Lakers that can add two superstars with a young core or flip that young core for veteran players. I think they're in a perfect position to go and make a real run at LeBron James. And obviously there's that secondary factor of, you know, he has two homes there, and there was talk of, you know, enrolling his kids in school there and wanted to be in the entertainment business. I think the Lakers, after that Clarkson trade, are perfectly positioned with assets and with salary cap to really make a run at this. And I think they've handled that kind of post-Kobe era and trying to set this up pretty well.
Yeah, I think they have, and I think you've got to give some credit to Pelinka and to Magic Johnson for doing that. And I think you look at the Kyle Kuzma draft pick, and that's a big part of this, because you mentioned getting off of the D'Angelo Russell contract, or getting off of D'Angelo Russell, former number two overall pick, but this regime didn't pick him, so they didn't have any allegiance to him, and they end up in Kuzma getting a player who projects now as a long-term starter, and they get him much deeper in the draft, so they didn't have to use a top 15 pick on him. So I think that plays into this a lot. Makes you feel a little better too if you end up moving on from Julius Randle, that you've replaced him with a skilled front court player.
And I think there's been a lot of conversation about the Lakers having traded their pick, which this year will convey to either Philly or to Boston or to, you know, all the convoluted scenarios, right? But if I said to you, with a pick in the top five, you got a player as good as Kuzma, you'd be pretty happy, right?
Well, I would think so, considering right now he's in the top five in all rookie and rookie of the year consideration. I mean, I think right now you look at the rookies this year, and Simmons wasn't drafted this year. And I would definitely have Kuzma in the top 10 if you were to redraft that thing. So they've done well with that. You look at some of the players that they've got coming up here on contracts. As you mentioned, Brook Lopez expires. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope expires, although they might, you know, that's a Rich Paul thing too. So they might decide to keep him around, you know, basically to try to attract LeBron there to Los Angeles, or sort of as a favor.
Don't think that favor wasn't recognized by LeBron and his people, right? Because Kentavious Caldwell-Pope had no market, had nowhere to go. The situation was totally botched by his management team, and oh, the Lakers. Wow, what a coincidence. They gave him the $17.7 million that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was looking for.
Right, in a year where they knew they weren't going to compete. So the other thing about the Lakers is we've seen they've had trouble attracting the premium free agent, but if you had LeBron there and maybe even add Paul George there too, you would be able to get guys to come in at less money. So you would be able to add the complementary pieces to a team in Los Angeles.
And also, isn't Magic Johnson an underrated factor in all this? Because we talked all the time about what Riley in the meeting must have been like in terms of having that cachet, having someone on the other end that can kind of, you know, really impress people that come into the room. Wouldn't Magic Johnson be the same thing for NBA players?
I think for some NBA players, it would have more of an effect than Riley, because people don't, well, first thing, they don't remember Riley at all as a player, the current generation. And most of the current generation, I mean, think if you go back to when Riley was at his, you know, I know he won a championship with Miami and as the head coach, and obviously as the guy pulling the strings, he won two additional ones. But look, when Riley made his name was the decade in Los Angeles as their head coach. And, you know, you're talking about the 80s. Now you're talking about guys who were not born during that period of time. Right? I mean, if you're at this stage, 28 years old, you were born in 1990. So you don't even remember Riley with the slick back hair. You know, Magic, those highlights have stuck around a little bit longer. So that might help in that regard. Obviously doesn't have the chops that Riley does as an executive, but I think with certain players it would help. I mean, you even saw this week, you know, as much as Isaiah Thomas was unhappy about everything that went down in Cleveland, he always wanted to be a Laker. There's a lot of players out there that always wanted to be a Laker, and a lot of that was as a result of Magic Johnson's success there, and then, you know, Kobe's on the back of that. So the other thing for LeBron is that, as opposed to Chicago, where the Bulls situation I thought was always complicated for LeBron because, you know, then he would be clearly following in Jordan's footsteps and would have to hear about that every day it was there. The Lakers have had so many stars over the years, unlike the Bulls, where Jordan stands apart from all the others.
It's the next in the long line rather than you're supplanting this individual.
Right. And I think that makes a big difference. And if you're going to resurrect a program in the NBA, you know, you looked at the three, you know, cities where the teams have really struggled in recent years, and it was Boston prior to their big three getting together, and then after it broke up, it was New York and it was the Lakers. Boston has already rebuilt. New York has never really seemed attractive to LeBron. The Lakers would make the most sense of those three organizations. All right, let's move to the next one here, the Houston Rockets. Now, Vegas has the Rockets, and again, this might have changed after the greatest game that any team has ever played, where they might switch it back to the Cavaliers, but they have the Rockets first. And, you know, I think a lot of that, we talked about Chris Paul earlier and him being there, and it looked like him committing potentially for the long term there. Obviously one of LeBron's closest friends in basketball. Of course, LeBron just approved the trade of one of his closest friends in basketball in Dwayne Wade. So I think, again, sometimes we make a little bit too much of this idea of LeBron wanting to play with his buddies. I think he wants to play with his buddies in the right circumstances. He left his best buddy, Dwayne Wade, to go to Cleveland in 2014. So I don't know necessarily that just Chris Paul being on Houston is enough, but clearly, Chris, the reason for this is, you know, the Rockets, Daryl Morey has done a really good job of building that organization. Houston is a city that a lot of players do like to play in. It's another place with no state tax, so that, like with the situation where LeBron was in Miami, he gets to keep a little bit more of his money. That's not the case in Los Angeles. Obviously, he's going to pay a lot of tax on his salary and his other ventures if he's in L.A. And Houston does look poised to go on, you know, a run here where they can challenge the Warriors, and they may be the only team in the NBA that's positioned to do that. The other thing is we've seen that Daryl Morey is capable of moving salary. He's done that repeatedly. He did it to get James Harden in the first place, and he did it when Chris Paul opted into his contract. And I believe Houston moved seven players to be able to make that trade to bring in Chris Paul. So he's been very creative in terms of the moves that he's made, and he also has a bent towards analytics, which I think LeBron does appreciate. And they got a head coach there in Mike D'Antoni, who, with the exception of his problem with Carmelo, which might play into this a little bit because of how tight LeBron is with Carmelo, but D'Antoni has familiarity with LeBron from the Olympics also, and is a coach that a lot of players like to play for. So those would be the reasons for Houston. Do any of those make sense for you, or do you see it going the other way?
They do make sense to me in the abstract, right? If I said to you, you can go play on a team with James Harden and Chris Paul, you go and do it, right? But Yes, Houston has experience with getting off a salary. Yes, Houston has experience with, you know, maneuvering around the rules, right? But I think this might be a bridge too far. And again, I this for me is about finding a place for LeBron to go and win the championship, right? And I just don't see how Houston can bring LeBron in, basically gut their team in order to do so, and sort of on the other side look competitive enough to really compete with Golden State. Now, obviously, there is a buyout market, and I think the buyout market will produce players over the next few years, particularly as more and more teams are trying to get off salary. You'll see the sort of minor moves that Golden State has made with bringing in Pachulia, with bringing in Omri Caspi and guys like that on sort of smaller contracts, and you say, wow, look at how attractive that is. But you look at Golden State's roster now, it's not the strongest, and I think they're going to struggle at times when they go to the bench in the playoffs. And I think when you look at Houston right now, they'll bring P.J. Tucker back. They could easily trade him. But Ryan Anderson next year is on $20 million. There's still 2 years left on his contract. That's going to be a hard one to get off of. Eric Gordon still has two more years left at around $13.5 million, $14 million. Chris Paul is obviously on a massive cap hold until they can sort of resolve his situation. Trevor Ariza is an unrestricted free agent. Clint Capella is a restricted free agent. And so I just think you go on down the line with their roster, they have too many things to do. And then on top of that, having to clear out, you know, between $30 and $35 million to bring LeBron James in. So even if they just wanted to stay intact as a team, they'd go into the luxury tax. To then add LeBron James, you're kind of gutting everything about that team. And then you have three players. You know, James Harden would be the best of them from a three-point shooting point of view. This is a team that's built upon three-point shooting, and the fact that they're blazing this new trail in the NBA as this three-point shooting behemoth, they kind of lose that identity if LeBron comes in too. So obviously you have Harden, you have Paul, you have LeBron. Paul, by the way, entering age 33, so you don't know if that's going to be, you know, him at peak form. And so I just think that Houston would lose too much of themselves to bring LeBron in. Obviously you go for it and you try and shoot for the stars because that's what Daryl Morey does, but I don't see it as attractive from a basketball point of view enough to actually win the championship in the Western Conference. There's too much compromising of who they are as a team in order to do it.
But they're going to go for it. I don't think there's any question.
Agreed.
I think more of the issue is whether he would go for it. I think if you look at their salary situation coming up, you know, Harden, I mean, that contract escalates too. I mean, it's at $30 million next year. Then it goes to $38, $41, $44. And then in 2022-23, which who knows if LeBron would still be playing at that stage. He once told me he wanted to play till he was 40. So what is he now? He's 33. So that's, I guess he would still be playing in that season. Harden's contract is a player option for $47 million. So the rest of their roster would be built the way that we saw the Heat try to build when LeBron first went to Miami, or the Heat tried to build when Shaq first went to Miami, which is you just try to build it out with role guys who take less money, you know, to play with these guys. I mean, that's the way it would have to be. But I do think Daryl Morey would take the swing because we've seen that as much as he talks about analytics and all the rest and building a roster that way, he goes for the big fish. I mean, they brought in Dwight Howard, didn't work out so well with James Harden. They made the trade for Harden, that ended up being a very good trade in terms of the pieces that they gave away, but it's time it seemed like they gave up a lot. And then they make the trade where they trade, what, seven guys off their roster to get Chris Paul. There's no question that Morey would do it. Would LeBron do it? I think, you know, a couple things here. One is, if Houston gets to the finals, if they beat Golden State, to me that takes the Rockets off the table for LeBron. Because then he's doing the Durant thing, especially if it's Cleveland on the other side of Houston in the NBA Finals. He can't switch teams like Durant did and go to the team that
beat
him. Why
not?
Because
I asked the question because we didn't think Durant would do it, but Durant did it.
No, we didn't. But LeBron is so legacy conscious. No matter how much he talks about how he's not, he is. There's no question. I mean, he's aware of everything. I remember in Cleveland having a conversation with him about he saw a meme that showed that that he brought in that tickets when he came to town went up more than when Kobe came to town that as a visiting player, and he was proud of this. Like, he takes all of that stuff, like, in terms of, you know, going after Jordan, being the best player of his generation, that stuff does matter to him, no matter how much he might say at times publicly that it doesn't. I don't think he could switch teams and go to the team that just beat him in the playoffs. I don't think that he would do that. Now, I think it's different if Houston loses to Golden State in five games in the Western Conference Finals, or if Houston loses, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if they lose to OKC in the second round, in a 2-3 matchup, if the Thunder get up to third here over the rest of the season, then I think there's more of a case that LeBron can make. Well, I'm trying to get this team over the hump, right? I'm trying to help them get to the finals and beat Golden State. And I think that would be a compelling story for him, going to the Western Conference for the first time. Then it would look like he's going into the teeth of it. That would look like more of a heroic move in terms of, okay, Golden State wins again, I'm going to go out there on your terms in your conference and try to beat you. I think that looks much better. So I think a lot of it has to do with what Houston does going forward. The other thing about this is, you know, a lot of it has to do with whether the star in a city is willing to welcome the other player there. And we saw in Miami that Dwayne Wade was willing to move aside a little bit and allow LeBron the space to be the number one guy on the team, right? And even though, as we've seen this week, how much Dwayne means to Miami, that Dwayne stepped aside a little bit in terms of his responsibility for LeBron. Would Harden do that, right? Because Harden is clearly, I mean, Chris Paul just got there. Harden has established himself as the face of Houston basketball, maybe the MVP this year. Would Harden be willing to move aside, and particularly because Harden handles the ball so much, too? We've already had the question this year of whether it would work with Harden and Paul playing together, and I know that D'Antoni has staggered them somewhat in terms of their minutes so that they both get a unit to run. But if you're going to add LeBron to that mix, you've got three guys who are used to bringing the ball up the court. Chris Paul might step aside, even as, you know, we know how Chris Paul can be a little stubborn sometimes. He might move aside. Would James Harden move aside? And I wonder if LeBron would look at that and say, is this a good fit for me to go to a team with two ball-dominant guys? That might be the other thing
right
to consider.
We talked about Houston for 8 minutes and didn't ponder. This is kind of a basketball redundancy. How does this work from a basketball point of view?
That might be something that they have to work through. All right, I want to get to team four here in terms of teams that could be in play for LeBron James this summer. And we're going to talk about this one in part, Chris, because both of us are based here, but also because you and I were a little bit stunned that Vegas came up with 10 teams as potential destinations for LeBron James and didn't put on there the team that he spent 4 years with and won two championships. So as part of this is just to throw it out there to please our Miami audience, but also I think
blatant pandering is that why this is here?
I think so a little bit, and we'll throw it out there for Team Petty, but also it's really not as crazy a notion as, say, Detroit, right? Or Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely.
That LeBron might just come back to a place that he tends to like to still spend a lot of time, which is Miami. And
Dwayne Wade did tell the local press on Friday, I plan on serving out the rest of my career here.
He said that, and he also said that he and LeBron would talk about the great times that they had together before in that other place. That other place was Miami.
And so, also, I believe Dwayne also said that he would catch LeBron looking at heat scores on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
That he was still keeping tabs on Miami.
I can't speak for the past couple of years, but I can tell you that first year back in Cleveland, that he was keeping tabs on Miami. A couple of circumstances. The one was the day that Riley, I happened to be in Cleveland when Riley, in the press conference in Miami, made the smiling faces with hidden agendas comment. And some of the reporters in Cleveland, I believe it was Joe Varden from Cleveland.com, asked LeBron about it. He hadn't heard about it at the time. He was asked about it after a practice because it happened while LeBron was practicing. And LeBron came up to me after the scrum because LeBron basically brushed it off. So I don't know what he's talking about. And he came up to me after the scrum and he said, what the bleep did Ryle say now? So he was keeping tabs on what was going on in Miami. Again, I can't speak for the past couple of years. I can say that he's made positive comments about a lot of Heat players over the years. So again,
there isn't that kind of burnt bridge from a fan point of view. Yeah, there are fans that, you know, kind of soured on him, but when he came back, it was a pretty positive experience.
I think it was. I mean, fans were not happy about two things, right? They were not happy about, you know, him not communicating with Riley at the end and some of the decisions that then the Heat went ahead and made, which they may not have made if they thought LeBron was leaving. The two primary moves that the Heat made beyond drafting Shabazz Napier, which the Heat probably would have drafted Clint Capella if they didn't know that LeBron liked Napier, which LeBron made clear on Twitter. The other two moves, which were not with LeBron's authority at the time, were signing Danny Granger. And the other move that they made at the time was Josh McRoberts, neither of which impressed LeBron. And I remember at the time, Chris, talking to a guy who was no longer with the Heat but had been with the Heat during the Big Three era, who said, that's what you're doing to keep LeBron, Danny Granger and Josh McRoberts. So, again, it depends on which side you talk to on that. But Heat fans were not happy because they thought if LeBron had committed earlier, they might have been able to get, say, a Kyle Lowry or a Pau Gasol or someone like that. And the other thing they weren't happy about was they felt LeBron didn't thank the fans enough when he left. So as far as the fans go, I think we've seen, Chris, fans, if you're a great, great player, fans are going to accept you back no matter what
happens.
We're all
giant frauds, is basically what, right. what you mean to say.
Right. But I don't know how he feels about his entire Miami experience at this time. He sold the house down here, right? His wife doesn't have the juice store down here anymore. There's really no ties with LeBron.
Remember when the juice store was a storyline? Oh, my God.
That was a huge storyline. Well, we talked about this on the MLS pod, right? Like, the huge storyline was LeBron was going to be involved with Beckham's team, right?
Yeah.
That didn't happen either. So he doesn't have really any ties to Miami, I guess, other than his trainer at this stage and, you know, people who are still in the Heat organization. But I just wouldn't rule it completely out. Again, when you're comparing it to some of the other teams here, I think it's far more likely that he would patch things up with Riley enough to be able to come back. Now, let's look at this from the – let's twist this a little bit, Chris. Maybe you handle some of this. On the Heat angle, could the Heat even create the space to bring in LeBron James? Because as I look at their roster, and we've talked about this in a couple of previous pods, but I don't know that they have a ton of movable contracts, and they don't have anything close to a max slot going forward. How would they do that?
Really, the way to do it would be to staple whatever bad contracts you have onto the young players, onto Winslow and onto Bam, and use those two guys as the incentive for getting off of that salary. So I think you can probably trade Hassan Whiteside for a decent haul or expiring contracts in return. So maybe you can get off of that salary pretty easily. But Tyler Johnson, catastrophe. We've talked about that a number of times in terms of what he's still owed. Goran Dragic, I think, again, you can trade for young pieces or pieces that are expiring so you can save some salary there. And then if you want to get off of James Johnson or Deion Waiters, I think you're stapling a Winslow or a Bam Adebayo to it in order to make that work. So to really get enough so that you can get to max space, you'd have to basically get rid of around $50 to $55 million. That's a lot of work to do, particularly when you can't trade a first-round pick until 2023 to really make it work. You gave up a protected 2024 second-round pick to make Dwayne Wade work in terms of getting him to come in. So I guess if you're looking at the biggest reason against it, there is just a long road in order to get to salary space. And again, you're gutting your team for one superstar. You can't even pair him with another superstar. And you have this Tyler Johnson situation. So I guess that would be the reason why this doesn't happen. And the making it with Riley thing that I think probably is a factor in all this as well.
Yeah, I think that could be bridged. I do think that could be bridged, and I think there are others in the organization who could step in there. And there may be, look, after what LeBron's dealt with in Cleveland in terms of the lack of organization there at times, I think that's what Wade was getting at with that quote. He said the way things were done, right? And I think that there's more appreciation now for the way things were done in Miami, the structure of Miami, some things that maybe LeBron didn't appreciate at the time. The other thing about this is everything that I've heard, particularly about that last year in Miami, and this was my observation being around that team every day too, is that it wasn't LeBron that was complaining about so many things that were going on with the team. It was other players who were going to LeBron to complain. So I think, again, a lot of that could be bridged, but you're right. When you look at the contracts, I mean, what would be left on the roster? Because to get rid of some of the players that they currently have, you're right, they would need to staple their more attractive players. So they would need to staple Adebayo, potentially. They would need to staple maybe even Josh Richardson's contract, which looks reasonable considering the player that Josh is morphing into here, and maybe Winslow's contract. So you're talking about the three players with the most upside on your team. To get rid of some of the other pieces, you would probably have to move two of those guys potentially, and then there's just nothing left. It's not like when LeBron came down in 2010 and, you know, the Heat was pretty easily able to move Michael Beasley's contract off the books. They had a lot of other contracts that were coming up because they'd prepared for it. And so, you know, really all they had left on the roster was Mario Chalmers, and it was they could kind of rebuild the team from scratch at that point, and that's what they did, and they were able to get those guys to take less money to be able to accommodate Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem. This would be, I think, I mean, you talk about Andy Ellisberg as a wizard, as the Heat's cap guy, but I don't know how you move all of these contracts. So we threw it on there for fun, because, again, I think it would be more attractive to LeBron than some of the other teams that are in this mix, because it's a proven organization that he knows can win, and it's in a place that he clearly still enjoys coming to. But I don't know how the Heat would be able to pull that off. All right, let's get to the fifth one here on our list of places that LeBron could potentially go this offseason, and we're just going to call it the field, Chris. Mm-hmm. So the three teams that you can make some kind of a case for, or at least LeBron having some interest in, beyond the four that we've talked about, would be the Spurs, the Sixers, and the Warriors. So let's go with the Spurs first. Do you see anything there for LeBron in San Antonio?
Again, it's a tough one because of the salary situation and what they would have to do in order to get him. I just think that you can't rule San Antonio out because of the pedigree that they have as an organization. But again, it's another basketball situation where you look at next year, they have Gasol on a deal that right now looks like a pretty bad one. Next year on $16 million. Patty Mills, they can trade. He's on 12. Danny Green, Rudy Gay, and Joffrey LeVerne all have player options for next year. Danny Green's on $10 million, so that's kind of iffy on whether or not he would. I'd imagine he'd be opting out of that. Rudy Gay on $8.8 million, maybe opts in, who knows. So it's really those top four salaries of Aldridge, Leonard, Gasol, and Patty Mills. In terms of players that are free agents currently on the team, Kyle Anderson's a player they probably want to bring back. Tony Parker is probably retiring. Davis Bertans is a young player, and Bryn Forbes as well. All young players, maybe you can get back relatively cheap. So that's another team that has to do some gymnastics in order to make this work. Kawhi Leonard, though, on just $20 million is pretty damn attractive at this point. So I do wonder if maybe LeBron considers it. The market isn't great, and I don't know if the surrounding team is good enough, but I'm never ruling out Pop because it's Pop. And I think if you're a superstar player and you're looking at a place to go and play, playing for Pop is pretty damn attractive.
And that appreciation for Pop, which has gone back a long ways, I think would only grow now that Pop has gotten so much more active politically and his views align exactly with LeBron's.
That's an interesting one. I didn't consider that.
Yeah, that he respects not just professionally, but also personally so much. And Pop was also the coach around the NBA who was most supportive of LeBron during the period of time where LeBron was getting blamed for things unfairly. If you go back, particularly to the early Heat days, Pop was the guy who was out there, you know, sort of waving the pom-poms for LeBron. So that hasn't been forgotten, I'm sure. So that would all play into it. But you're right. They have some things that they would have to do. I think it does appeal. It would appeal to LeBron, though, also. Not only is this a winning organization, but I don't think the Spurs are probably going to get past the second round in the playoffs, so it wouldn't be dealing with a legacy issue there in terms of joining a team that was at the top. I think it's going to be hard for the Spurs to get out of the second round this year, so a little bit easier for them to join them. All right, total opposite end of the spectrum here in terms of organizations, the way that they've done things over the years, although they do have a former Spurs coach in charge, the Sixers. And I know you've watched the situation closely because you were a fan of a lot of their rebuild.
I like the process.
You like the process. You trusted it. Is the process at a stage now where it's a potential option for LeBron James?
Yes. I really do believe that because you look at their current salary situation, the fact that, yes, they signed Joel Embiid to an extension that starts to kick in next year, but they're pretty low in terms of money and in terms of the commitments that they have. They only have around $70 million, basically, committed to players next year, and 25 of that is going to Embiid. So you have Covington, who's on a really good contract at $10 million. Jared Bayless, who's on an expiring contract, so that's pretty easy to get rid of that $8.5 million. Markelle Fultz, who he for me is the interesting one because you can trade him and get rid of his $8 million and maybe, you know, get off of him and get something back in return. But I think Markelle Fultz might be the only kind of difficulty in all this. But you look at the rest of the team, Ben Simmons on $6.5 million, Dario Saric on $2.5 million. So you have contributors, you have salary cap space, So I really do think that Philly would be, if I was kind of looking at it, we talk about great basketball cities. I think, you know, the way that the Sixers fans have gotten behind the process and now are super excited about the fact that they have a playoff contending team and appear to have a real future, I think would be really cool to be a part of. It's a young group. Embiid right now is 23, Simmons 21, Saric 23, Justin Anderson 24, Markelle Fultz only 19. So it's a hugely promising situation, and I think LeBron should consider it.
Couple things here. First, natural rivalry with Boston, which I think is appealing to LeBron. Also, you know, we saw with them winning the Super Bowl how that city reacted. That's obviously appealing also. So I think that would be attractive to him just in terms of the way the fan base acted. But the other thing to look at, too, is Ben Simmons is a clutch client. He's with LeBron's agency.
I'm glad you know this stuff, because that for me is just
That matters. That's the reason that Tristan Thompson's getting paid what he's getting paid in Cleveland. That's the reason, as we talked about, that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope got $18 million with the Lakers. That's a big deal here, because LeBron had a relationship. You know, there's been a lot written and said about his relationship with Rich Paul and how that evolved, but you know, Ben Simmons is next for that agency, right? Like, LeBron was the guy, and now Ben Simmons, you know, at 21 years old, looks like he's going to be, you know, someone who makes 10 all-star teams and potentially wins MVPs. And he's the greatest success story for that agency so far, because, you know, it started with LeBron, and now LeBron's been part of building that agency. And so what would be better than playing with the guy and helping to sort of instill things in him that you want to instill? You know, what would be better than that? Let's get to the last one here, and we just got to throw it out there because it did get a lot of talk a couple of weeks ago. The Warriors, I don't see any way, honestly, that LeBron does this. I could see him meeting with Golden State and it raising, you know, a big uproar here, but I could see him meeting with them to sort of get some secrets about the way that they run things. You know, he's always said good things about Steve Kerr also, and I think some of, you know, Kerr is a little bit like Popovich, and the fact that his views align with LeBron in a lot of ways. So I could see him having a meeting with the Warriors, but I think, you know, unless the Warriors went out in the first round here and looked awful doing it and were fracturing it, LeBron could come save them. I think from a legacy perspective, it's a terrible move for him, and I just don't see how it makes any sense. I guess the other issue is how the Warriors, with their cap situation, would be able to. I mean, clearly Klay Thompson would be out the door, but who else would they have to get rid of?
I think it just doesn't
make a lot of sense.
I think they could do it because KD's on a one-year deal, right? So I think they could do it if KD takes a little bit less, and then they get off of Iguodala, Livingston. I don't know. I remember Kevin Pelton wrote after the Chris Haynes story about how they would do it, and I think it wouldn't take that much. I do sort of wonder though if the legacy question can be a bit overstated, because it's something that we as media people think about, but I'm not sure that, you know, basketball players, particularly, I think LeBron broke the mold in this area when he joined with Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade to come and play in Miami, and then all the players that have followed suit since. Yes, obviously, this idea that Golden State being so good that they've ruined basketball would only get further exacerbated by LeBron being there, but I'm not sure that modern players care that much. And so I do sort of wonder if, let me go have some fun, let me win some titles and enjoy myself. I still think that's an enticing proposition. I still view it to be a remote possibility, but not one that I'm totally ruling out because of this kind of modern era of basketball where this has become more and more common.
Right, but if you look at the Miami situation, when he joined them the first time, that was a team that was coming off two first-round losses, right? Like, I mean, a team that won in the 40s, the two previous years.
But it's still a team, Ethan, that I think a lot of people thought. Jeff Van Gundy even gave voice to it at the time.
Yeah, he said they'd win 72 games.
That this was kind of the end of basketball. Who's going to be able to compete with them?
But then it's gotten worse since. Right. I mean, I think the Durant, I mean, to me, the closest comparison of all of them is Durant going out to Golden State. But then this is overkill on top of overkill. I would have a hard time seeing how LeBron's image would be able to survive going out to Golden State. I don't think it would matter what he did as a player. Whereas I think we look at all these other options, I think that there's still room for LeBron's legacy to grow. I think he goes to Golden State and it's pretty much capped out at that point. All right, so we've got, seven different options that we covered here on the podcast. Be sure, if you're on iTunes in particular, leave your comments with what you think is the most likely destination. You can find us on iTunes. If you have Android, you can find us on Stitcher. Also find us on Google Play. Downloads have been growing. We appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and be sure to suggest topics as well, and we will speak to you soon.